This is Lachlan Rouston.
This is Ralph Friedman. And you're listening to the fittest podcast in Australia,
The Mind Muscle Project. All right, Project, welcome back to this week's after show. Very excited to jump into a few different things today. It's been a busy week. It's been a pretty crazy thing. Things have gotten fucking cold. Probably where I wanted to start it. We had like, I think they call it like the polar rush or something is what I heard. The polar blast. Oh, that's what I heard. People say, there's a polar blast coming. I'm like, this sounds awful. A polar blast in Sydney is not the same as a polar blast in like, I was reading Jordan Peterson's book and he talks about one of the rules of life. He describes the story of what it was like growing up in his hometown. It was like some northern part of Canada. And they have heaters. So when you drive your car into your garage, right, in your garage, you have like you plug it into this heater and the heater runs hot water through the engine. So like the oil doesn't freeze. Because like if the oil freezes, that's it. The car's done. You got to take the part of the engine out and go inside and defrost it, right? You got to run it all night to keep the not cold. And then,
I had to do that last night, I think.
And then they have, in those cars, where he tells this story once of like, you know, driving through like a snowstorm or driving through like what's not a snowstorm, then it becomes a snowstorm. You can't see anything, right? You can't even see 2 meters in front of you. And he had like the aircon had broken. So he like had like a lighter or something hot. And he was like having to light and warm up the windscreen while his mate was driving to like keep it defrosted as they were driving through. And I just thought to myself, like, that's a different, like, people died all the time there. Like, homeless people would die nonstop in winter, like, all the time, because it's just,
not a good place to be homeless.
And he said, it wasn't homeless people that died all the time. There was that as well, but it was people getting drunk.
Yeah.
So people would get drunk and they would walk outside and they would just, like, I don't know, go for a pee or something or like pass out and then they'd die because it's so cold. Like, imagine that being like a risk. Is like people get so drunk, you have to lock the doors so they don't go outside and just end up dead in the snow.
That's what I always think, because here we get tons of Irish people that come and I see them like waking up around where I live at 5 a.m. I'm like, oh, dude, if you were at home, you'd be dead.
Waking up at 5 a.m.
Yeah, like they're waking up in the morning.
Yeah.
Like, because they've fallen asleep on the street somewhere.
Oh, right. Yeah.
From a big night out.
Yeah.
Particularly around like St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is why you came here. Because if they did that at home, they'd be dead.
Yeah, it's too cold.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Anyways, so I think when you read stuff like that and you get the story told extremely well, you have an appreciation for how good our weather is here. But anyway, has gone a lot colder. And what was interesting, the observation that I've made this year, and I think everyone's made this observation, I think wherever you live, because we spent two seasons essentially indoors, depending on where you live in the world, we didn't get enough exposure. And my theory is why, to be honest, I don't really get sick that much anyway, but you haven't really been sick despite having a little one who's like getting sick all the time. I think that, and we know that the exposure has a large impact on immunity. And so if you're getting constant exposure from the outdoors, then you're helping to build up your immune system. When you limit your exposure, right? So when you're spending heaps of time indoors, aka a fucking lockdown, right? Aka not interacting with the germs and, you know, the biology of other people that help strengthen your immune system constantly by just being out in public and being amongst other people, then the next season that rolls around, it's going to make you more vulnerable to those things because your immune system hasn't kept up its usual fight that it works hard to basically keep you alive. So that's why I think so many people have gone sick. So all of a sudden, the temperature changes, which is, you know, they're not used to that kind of exposure and it drops really fast. And they haven't had, you know, the last 6 to 12 months of just general exposure and contact with other viruses and diseases that you just get from normal interaction in life. But we've kind of artificially produced that. We did 75 hard, so we're outdoors in the rain and stuff all the time, exposing ourselves. And now I've been doing these cold showers constantly, and I feel great. My body feels really strong. Obviously, I could get struck down with illness at any time, but I feel like they're very tightly correlated with the immune system. And actually, I was talking about the cold showers last night with Connor, and he's like, oh, do you just like, you know, go hot first and then go into cold? Or do you? And I'm like, you know what I do? Is the worst part is the anticipation of the cold, right? And so like the faster you can go from time for a cold shower to being in the shower, the better. The more you have to think about it, the less likely you're going to do it, right? Which is a metaphor for anything, which is, I think, part of the point of cold exposure is it's like, oh, there's this gap between what you really need to do. Like, I need to get in the car and go to the gym. The more you think about it, the less likely you are to do it. That's why you got to, like, just go straight home, get into your wardrobe, like, put your workout gear on and just go straight there.
It's like, it's like no one has trouble getting into the cold rain. It just starts raining.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, fuck, it's raining.
Exactly. So,
you're like, here it comes.
Yeah. And it's, and then, but I was saying to him, I imagine that the water is like warm. And I go into it expecting the water to be warm. I think if you go into something and you're like shelled up and you're frightened and you've like got your shoulders rounded and you're like creeping into it one step at a time, then it feels worse when it touches you.
Yeah, it's like jumping in the pool.
Yeah, like expecting yourself to be to be hurt. So you just go into it with a good posture, nice and confident. Then when it hits you, it's not as bad. Yeah. It's really only bad for like 10, 15 seconds. But now it's like it just feels really normal. And I think it is really good for the immune system.
You definitely can adapt because I know tons of people that do that down on the beach. If you just keep swimming every day, you can swim through winter.
Mm.
But if you just swim in summer and then you just walk in the water at winter, it's freezing.
It is freezing. What do you think is worse, like the cold shower or the cold plunge?
I think like getting out in the ocean in the midwinter where it's like really cold, I think it's worse.
Yeah, that's pretty bad.
Yeah, I think it's worse. I find, partly because it kind of like splashes on you, like you slowly get in, the wind is like rushing, outdoor aspect of it is worse. But for indoors, yeah, maybe the shower actually.
Okay. Yeah, I think like, because a few people have done both. And they always say that the shower's worse.
Mm, yeah, I think
because it's like constant movement. I think because with the cold, once you settle into it, the water's not moving that much. Yeah.
And the truth is a cold plunge, because something I do in my pool is that if you just like stay really still and squeeze your body together, you can actually stay not too cold. It's when you move around and the fresh cold water is hitting you.
Yeah.
Which in the shower, you don't get that.
So that is, so when I went to this like sauna and ice place recently, because I think I was suddenly a little bit sick and I was like, oh, I'll do some hot cold exposure, ramp up my immunity. And I went into the place and their ice tub is like, it's constantly moving the water.
Yeah, that's much colder.
I could not sit in it for 100%. Very long. I was like, I'll just go into the ice for like 5 minutes. I could barely do two. Because it's that constant movement. Because what it is, right, your body, this is how wetsuits work, is if you know anything about wetsuits. But basically, it's not protecting you from the water. What happens to the wetsuit, it allows water to go in, right? And then what it does is it holds a thin layer of water between you and the wetsuit. And that layer of water is heated by your body. And that's that warm water basically stays there and it keeps you warm. That's how a wetsuit works, right? So, same idea with an ice tub. If you just sit really still, you are heating a small layer of water around your body. If that water is constantly being moved and that it's that cooling, that's like why why air cools you down, right? Because you're sweating, you turn the fan on, and then it's cooling, it's drying that sweat on your body, and that's what cools you down. It's the evaporation, right? And so the same thing, when that water is moving, it washes that warm water around your body away, it cools you down even more. And man, it was like torturous. So like moving water is like way colder. Remember that time we went to the farm, we dived into that lake, that
fuck,
river?
That was cold.
That was moving, right?
Yeah. That's, running river. And that was probably 1 degree.
That still to this day, the coldest water I have ever gotten into that was ridiculous.
It was so cold. I remember jumping in and I thought, I thought someone had grabbed my ankles. Because they'd like, I don't know, they'd clenched so hard. Like, I thought someone was holding, like, had grabbed them and held onto them.
I would love to do it again. Because I remember trying to swim, and then all of a sudden, it didn't feel like I had my arms.
Yeah.
It just felt like I was just a head floating, and then I just was in someone else's body. Because my body had just gone, it's completely numb.
It's called first stage of death. last point on this, and I think that it's a good one. So, exactly what you said, I agree. And I think that like COVID was happening, everyone was like, oh, the rates of like general colds and flus have gone down heaps, right? Yeah. Such a good thing. That was such short-term thinking.
Yeah.
People were like, oh, we should like keep this up more often, you know, the social distancing and like not going out when you don't need to. But it's kind of like just stopping everyone training and then looking at the injury rates plummet.
Yeah.
You're like, look, dude, injury rates are off the charts right now. Everyone's sitting at home in a bed. This is going to work long-term. Yeah. Nah, it's not going to work long-term.
Yeah.
And it's similar here. You can't just like, stay at home, not go outside, not see people, and then be like, it's so much better. Because eventually you will, and then it'll be worse.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a perfect example. But talking about fucking beast mode, Iron Cowboy. 101.
Mm.
101. Just for the icing on the cake. In case there was some crazy motherfucker out there in Russia that was like, no, I'm going to do 101. He's like, I got you. 101. Now, if you don't know, James Lawrence, Iron Cowboy, who we had on the show, who you interviewed, he just completed 100 Ironmen in 100 Ironmans in 100 days. 101, sorry.
Yeah.
Now, we watched The Last Mile Live. Pretty incredible feat. Interesting video to follow up, though. So, he posted a video of himself. He's now 24. It was like 24 hours removed from the last Ironman. And he's like, he's going to the University of...
UCLA
to get like post-testing done, like MRI scans, like see what the damage is. And he's like filming this video. He's talking to the camera. You can see it on his Instagram. He's like, all right, cool. I'm like 24 hours removed from the event. And I feel like absolute shit. And his theory was like he said
it was the worst he's felt on the whole thing.
Yeah. He feels like his body was so far gone that he was in like the ultimate flow state.
Mm.
So he had like been able to get his mind to a place where he was able to block everything out and just focus on the task at hand. And he's come out of that flow state and he's like, I guess he's feeling all the pains and stuff of the accumulated damage that he's taken. And he's like, yeah, my brain's super foggy and I can't concentrate. Everything aches, everything hurts. And it's interesting because he wasn't feeling any of that during the race. And now that's all he can feel. So it is interesting the state that you can like, where you can shift your mind to kind of block out a lot of pain. I found it's very interesting. I guess it's what guys that go through like the Navy SEALs do, right? So, because I was thinking when I'm standing in the cold shower and I'm like, oh, this is freezing. I think of the guys that are like linking their arms, they're in the beach, it's like freezing cold, and they're doing sit-ups in the ocean in like their combat gear, and they're wet and they're hungry and they're sleep deprived. And I think, fuck, that's awful. But I think by the time you get to that point, your mind is in such a different zone that how you're seeing and rationalizing things is so different to how you would normally perceive and rationalize things. You just get yourself in this state where you just go. And like nothing is stopping you. You can't think too much. You just got to be super present in the moment. It's interesting.
Yeah, and I think it's a good example as well. You think, obviously, it's such a crazy feat. But when you see that, you realize, I think, you know, definitely one of the reasons he's able to do that is just because he has so much support and so much accountability.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, obviously, it's a big thing, 100, right? He couldn't quit.
Yeah.
Like, he could have, but... There was a consequence, right? Yeah. He'd built this up a lot, and you could just imagine, you know, there were probably some days in there where he was like, can't do today.
Yeah.
And there was just people there like, we're doing today. And you know, obviously, he's got to do it, but they're there to push him through. So, it was a good example. I think, when you want to do something really crazy like that, the more support and accountability you can get on it, you need it. Like, I just couldn't imagine he could do that by himself.
Mm. Okay. Now, this is a bit of an age-old debate. Do you think that achievement was more of an achievement than Ross Edgley's swim around the UK?
Yeah.
You think it is?
Yeah.
I don't.
I think it's harder.
I think the swim was harder.
Really?
Yeah. I think the swim was harder. I'll give you a few reasons why.
Yeah.
Okay, first of all, no support. You got support, but it's like you're fucking out in the ocean all the time with like two people, right? Second is that there's like very little body work compared to, and like... Like Lawrence, every time he finished, he got to go to like a warm bed, right? He got to like get body work. He got to be around his family, right? Get the massages, fucking going to like...
Fucking needed the massage.
Dude, he was like in saunas and shit and like in hot tubs and like cold tubs. Like he got everything, right? Like five-star of like recovery. Bro, Ross like sleeping on a boat, 6 hours on, 6 hours off. Didn't matter if... Bro, he's waking up like... At least Cowboy got to like fucking have a normal sleep schedule. Edgley's like freezing out on a boat... 6 hours, middle of the night, go take your fucking frozen ass wetsuit, put on, jump in the water and start swimming. With like no end in sight. And then some days you get out, they're like, cool, you went backwards today. At least Cowboy finished one every day. He's like, all right, one step closer. Edgley's like, bro, today you went backwards. You swam as hard as you could for 6 hours and you went backwards. Okay. Second, he's out in the ocean, like nonstop every day with like the threat of like a shark. I know there's not many sharks and shit out there, but it's like, that was like jellyfish and shit. Bro, and it's like one thing. Out in the ocean, can't talk to anyone. At least by the time Lawrence gets out of the pool, he's like, all right, cool. He can chat to people on the bike, he can chat to people on the walk. Edgley's in there in silence for 6 months in silence, dude. Went way longer than he expected. At least Lawrence is like, end date in 100 days. No, I'm going to get there. Edgley was like, cool, we're planning for 3 months. Took six. This might not ever end. I think it was like, I'm not discrediting it, but in the comparison game, I just think what Edgley did was way harder. I actually think it was way harder. I'm not saying Lawrence couldn't do that. I just think as a physical feat, I think Edgley's thing is like way more incredible.
Yeah, no, I still think the Iron Cowboys is harder. I think the main, they're both really hard. Depends what you enjoy and what you don't. But a lot of people do very long swimming like that, like days and days of swimming. And what I thought was hard about Iron Cowboys was that any day it can be finished. So there was no easier day. Couldn't have a day where like got injured, couldn't complete it, because it had to be completed every day. You know what I mean? And that's what I thought was the really hard thing about it. Like if one day went really off the rails, which there were
It fell off, it got hit, right?
Yeah, it was like, cool, a few hours less sleep. It was no like, okay, we'll catch this up tomorrow. You know, that and I think that aspect of it was particularly challenging. I do also think the impact of the running seemed like it fucking took a toll on him. Like the physical, I mean, definitely with the swimming as well, like his body would fucking morphed into different shit. But it's like
so fat when you finish.
The physical impact of like, just like a more high impact thing of like trying to, yeah, go on the road and move your body, I thought was exceptionally hard. And then just the, to me, the comparison to what other people do. So like a bunch of people tried to do the 50 thing, no one could nearly come near and do it, right? And a bunch of people have done like consecutive Ironman, but it's generally like, they usually go a lot faster because they'll run or whatever, but it's usually like four. Or five, you know, it seems like he's done a fucking lot more than anybody else. But then equally, it's not nearly as long as Ross Edgley. Ross Edgley was like half a year. It's considerably longer.
Yeah, I think it's just the main separator for what I think was the difference. And this is what like Navy SEALs talk about a lot. It's the unknown. Like Edgley had...
He had sharks and shit as well.
Yeah, dude. He had so much more unknown than... Cowboy. And I know, yeah, I think physically, like maybe the feat is harder in terms of like the training you'd need to do for it and stuff. But I think because of the unknown aspect to it, it makes it so much more difficult. Like
they should swap, see if the other person can do it.
I'd love to see them swap. But, and I think they would both do it. You know, I think they're that savage. But, I think what's interesting is, because like the Navy SEALs, I've heard them talk about it in some podcasts. I can't remember what podcast I was listening to, but there's like one event on like the Sunday morning and it's like one of the easiest tasks like physically to get through, but it's like where the most people quit in Hell Week.
But what do you have to do?
So what it is they're, I think it's like maybe the fourth day in, like pretty close to the end. And so they're pretty beat up at this stage, but they've got through most of the hard stuff, like the drowning and stuff like that. Like I don't know, some crazy like sleep deprivation shit. And it's like morning, it's not that cold. And the coach is like, but they've gone through a lot at this point. And the trainer or whatever is like, all right, guys, up and down the beach, like just running lengths and at any pace, like they don't have to like spin or anything. He's like, cool, jog down the beach, jog back, keep going. We'll let you know when to stop. And they walk off and they just start jogging. And that's actually the thing where most people quit. And it's because of the unknown, right? Because people start to panic. They go, fuck, we've been doing this for ages. How much longer do we have to go? Bro, what if we're going to be out here for like 12 hours, right? And after like 3-4 hours, people start freaking out because they're like, they're never going to come back, right? What if we're only like 10, and their mind starts fucking with them because of the unknown? What if someone's like, cool, like we're going to do 5 hours and we're going to try and get 100 sprints in? You're like, all right, cool, 5 hours, 100 sprints, like I can get there, you know? And you rationalize it in your head. And Edgley, even though he's like, let's get around here, at some point it would have been like, I might not make this. Like, I don't know how much longer there is to go. We said 3 months. It's been four.
No, there was a good chance he wouldn't be able to do it. Cause he hadn't done... When he came on our show, there was a recent challenge he didn't make.
Right.
There was... I can't remember what it was. I think he was swimming between like...
He was swimming with the log. He couldn't get there.
He didn't get there.
Yeah.
Yeah, he didn't get there.
So, there's just like... And look, there's also the element that Cowboy couldn't do it, but at least he had in his head every day, he'd be like, oh, a little bit closer.
I tell you what, I thought the craziest one with Cowboy was when it was like 4 days in, his ankle like blew up.
Yeah.
Bro, it was like a sausage. Yeah. Like you would look at that, anyone would be like, dude, you need months off at this point. And he had 96 to go. Dude could barely walk.
It is crazy. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to make a comparison, but both pretty crazy. The only way to know is they have to swap.
I wonder what they'll do next. You have to retire at some point. You have to retire because you just can't keep going along like
that's
this.
What I mean. I was like talking to one of the boys. I'm like, he's going to spend, you know, a good 3-4 years on the speaking circuit, making heaps of money, like inspiring people. But in the back of his mind, he's going to be thinking like,
what's next?
Oh, I'm going to have to one up myself.
Well, he took, how long did he take off? He took about 3-4 years off to come back to this.
Yeah.
That's how long this shit takes. Yeah.
Fuck, it's crazy. Okay. So I kept obviously I kept it front of mind, but Peloton was is opening just near the studio here. They're opening a store.
So two stores, I think. One in the city.
That's what I was gonna say.
And then one in Bondi Junction.
It replaced the Tesla store in the city.
Yeah, such a good swap.
Yeah. Yeah. So they're obviously making this big push here. And they had...
Well, they're opening in July is when you can buy one in Australia. And use the discount code MMP. You get fucking nothing.
And then Michael Cannon Brooks, who's the founder of Atlassian. Yep. Apparently, they gave one to him and he was posting about it and stuff. So
yeah, I think those guys got one. Like, they brought them over early.
Yeah.
If you're fucking rich.
I mean, what do you think about Peloton?
Man, I think it's such a... Like, obviously, super successful. I think it's the most successful fitness brand in recent memory.
Their shares are plummeting at the moment, though. Yeah. I don't know why. Maybe they just came off such a high peak.
I'm not sure. Yeah, but I know they went down a lot recently when a baby died on the treadmill.
What happened?
Like, it went underneath.
Oh.
Yeah.
So, could it happen to any treadmill?
Yeah, it's happened to other treadmills. How, like, I think my Tyson's kid died like that as well.
Fuck.
It's not... There's been a lot of babies die in treadmills, but I think now they're recalling the treadmills.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's been a recall on treadmills. Because there's, like, man, there's safety measures or whatever, and obviously it didn't meet
it. They rushed it, yeah.
Not saying... Okay, I am saying if you have a baby, I probably wouldn't get their treadmill
after
that. But yeah, they've had some issues. Man, I do think is something a bit overrated about the whole thing.
I think so.
I've tried a Peloton bike. Man, it's just a bike.
Exactly.
It's a fucking overpriced bike.
Yeah.
And like, yes, you can look at a cool screen. B, if you need a really cool screen, a personal screen, just to get on a bike, I think you've got like another problem. Like you need to kind of fall in love more with your exercise. It's not always the best just to have like more screen time in your life, that's your exercise as well.
Yeah.
So I just like don't think it's like the ultimate thing for people to get, particularly at the price point. It's like 3x the price of as good a bike without the screen. You can, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You can,
yeah.
Like, you can just like get another bike and follow a workout on your computer.
Yeah.
You know, for a fraction of the cost. And then from what I've seen online, because I did look at it, you can like turn the screen and then do stuff off the floor. Man, it's nothing. It's like, you know, lunge, twist. That shit's free on Apple Fitness, whatever it is, $7 a week. It's just not that good. I'm sure they're likely going to be successful here. Is it the answer to like everyone's fitness routine? Like, I really, really, really don't think it is.
Yeah. I just think that Peloton have some of, if not the best marketing in fitness. I think their marketing is absolutely incredible. Like, you look at a Peloton ad or a Peloton website or a Peloton like video, and they are just world class with their marketing. It just makes you want to buy one.
Well, I even remember just the first time I came across them was an ad read on Tim Ferriss's podcast.
Okay.
And I remember hearing his, he's like, man, this is what I'm using every day. And I was like, fuck, he's going to sell a lot of these. Because even I was like, man, I think I need that.
Yeah.
I fucking don't need it.
They have great marketing. They just, that's what they do. And great marketing makes you believe that it's a great product for you. And it's just not. Like, it's, even someone was asking me, oh, you're going to get Peloton bikes in your gym?
I'm like, no. I'm like, are you kidding?
I'm like, firstly, do you understand? I don't think you understand how Peloton works. It's an at-home bike. It's trying to connect you with other people riding your bike. But second, it's just a bike, man. It's just like, it's not, it's still going to be the same stimulus. It's not going to be that exciting.
It's not as good as like a genuine watt bike. Like, I've tried them, and it's not as good, I think, for fitness. It's like a concept 2 bike.
Yeah.
Not as versatile because like, of the positioning and everything. And like the treadmills... Kills babies and it's just fucking treadmill, right?
Kills babies.
We're getting so excited about. So, and the price point is truly absurd. So, I'm like, yeah, I'm not that excited about it. I hope it's not like the biggest ever thing that comes to fitness. I do think though from like a, because we're in the industry, we run gyms. People are always like, hey, you know, are people going to need gyms anymore with COVID? I think this type of stuff is going to really hurt like cycle studios.
Yeah.
I think that, man, do you need to go to a cycle studio? This does replace like, it's not as good as a studio, but it's getting closer.
The cycle studios are the ones that I'd be most worried about.
It's maybe like 70% of the way there, and you don't need to go to the class. You don't need to book in. It's in your house. I think that someone to me was like, hey, I'm thinking of doing a cycle studio. I would be like, oh man, if you really enjoy that, I think you should just consider Peloton.
Yeah.
It's probably it probably is the cost of a year and a half's membership. But after that year and a half, yeah, you can just keep doing it, right? So if you can afford it, I reckon it's probably a better option than traveling and all that lost time. But that's just like not what we offer at my gyms. And it's nowhere near a replacement to a proper gym.
Yeah. Man, I think Peloton is what it's... I think what's so going to be so interesting about it coming to Australia is it is like a really, really American brand. And I was be very interested to see if... Because obviously that's always the thing I'm most interested in seeing is how American marketing translates into Australian marketing. And like, yeah, they can have some early insights and stuff. But like when Barry's came to Australia, Barry's is really only doing good now. They've been in Australia for like 4 or 5 years, you know, and it's because it's taken them so long to figure out the Australian market. And it seems so similar in so many ways because the raw numbers, how much they're spending on fitness, how many people have gym memberships, how many people eat healthy and organic and like... A lot of the numbers match up to a lot of the major cities in America. So, like, yeah, we got this. Let's go into the Australian market and add on fucking whatever, 10% revenue. It's not that easy. Australian consumers are very different. And, like, I don't know if you've got a bunch of, you know, an American interface with American coaches, you know, I don't know how they're going to deliver it, but, you know, the Aussies might not engage for that long. They might not enjoy it that much, or they might... Like, I feel like Americans can stay very engaged with some very cheesy stuff for a very long time.
Let's go, guys.
Yeah. Here we go. Aussies after a while, like, bro, it's fucking lame. Same shit every day. You know, that's what they say. But, you know, day one of Barry's Bootcamp for, you know, an American, they can, same energy, same excitement for it on like year five. You know what I mean? But Aussies get over it very quick if it doesn't kind of fit the culture. Right? So I think it'll explode for a very short period of time and then they'll just collect dust. A lot of people.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be a dust collector in people's house. My business idea, I'm definitely not going to do this so you can steal it, was that I reckon there would be a good market for similar thing to Peloton, but with boxing.
Oh, yeah.
So you hang like a boxing bag in your home and it kind of like lights up and shows you like where to hit it and how to do combinations and stuff. Because a lot of people have boxing bags and they collect dust at home because you don't really know how to hit it. You know, I used to have one as well, but like there's no coaching. It's hard to follow a good workout, but that is nearly as good as like Rumble boxing and stuff where you follow the screens and you hit the pads. If they could have a screen and you hit your bag and you know, then you get off and you do your burpees or whatever, good workout. So I think that, yeah, the future of those gyms that are single modality, just boxing, just cycle class, they can be replaced at home with good technology. It's not going to replace like a good gym.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're planning to do a YouTube series, a workout from home YouTube series with Raph and me. Oh yeah.
Oh cool.
Yeah, yeah. It's
with our Peloton bikes.
No, it'll be interesting. You guys will see it when it comes out. One thing that I'll add to this as well is that I've been watching more of this, the Wall Street documentary that we reviewed last week, which has become my favorite show at the moment, and I don't watch it with anyone else but myself, just in transit to the gyms in the morning and at night. But what's interesting is like there's heat. Like Mark is just savage, bro. Like he works out every day, right?
And, Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah. Like he lives and breathes fitness. Like the dude is
awesome.
Yeah, it's why I think, I know I've heard a lot of stories about him not being the friendliest guy ever and being a bit rude and stuff, but I don't really care. He's just my idol.
I think he's from that part of America.
Like, no, it's just like full part. East Coast, yeah. Like, you know, really rough upbringing and stuff. Heaps of his mates died. He talks about it all the time. Like, anyway, so he's just super badass and he's... It's interesting because his workout routine like does heaps of random shit, right? He's not like one of those guys who is like, say, The Rock, right? You imagine The Rock's workout routine? It's like loads of bodybuilding and powerlifting, right? That's pretty much it, And then he's like going on the Stairmaster and stuff. Like, it's like, oh, he's like training like a bodybuilder. Dude, Wahlberg does everything. He's like, yeah, some days he's like just like benching and lifting weights and doing curls and like doing strength training. And other days he's on like this crazy machine with all these handles and shit.
I saw that.
Doing like jumping fucking ski erg shit. And then he's doing like crazy twists and stuff. And then one day he's like hanging from the roof doing like inverted sit-ups and stuff like that. Other days he's like doing skipping and boxing. Like he's got tons of different skills that he uses when he works out.
If you watch, I used to watch like those really early workout routines. I think in the 90s.
That he would do?
Yeah, that he would do with his trainer. Right. And it was like...
I don't know.
Yeah, like, but it was like kind of like boxing training. Like, he was super athletic.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's what I mean. Like, he's a bit of an athlete. Like, he plays sport and stuff like that.
Did he even do boxing for a while? I think he might
probably
have.
Not as a boxer.
Maybe not,
but
yeah.
He can box.
Yeah.
Yeah, he can hit, like, the speed bag and shit. Like, yeah. He's been in a boxing gym and stuff. And he can do, like, proper boxing, skipping and stuff. But he's a beast, bro. Like, he's a full energized bunny. But it made me think, like, the guys that... I like him, right? Super high energy, always go, go, go. And I think about ourselves as well. We're a little bit like that. Like, we're kind of as high energy as you can be for an Aussie. And but also, like, we're going all the time. We're doing heaps of stuff. We're working out. I reckon it's just so much of it because people are like, man, I don't know how that guy's like crazy energy all the time. Okay. Besides the fact that, I don't know, maybe he's like drinking heaps of coffee or whatever as well, but it's fitness. It's just having more energy. It's just fitness. And when you're really fit, you can just go more and put out more energy throughout the day is what I've noticed as well. And yeah, there's like...
Very true.
there are just some days like you don't get a good sleep. I don't know, Z keeps you up or whatever, or like, I don't know, I end up going to bed late and then get up early. And yeah, it's going to be a day. Obviously, you slept less, so you're not going to have as much energy. But if you're always looking after your sleep, you're always training and stuff, like you're going to be a more high energy person. People are like, fuck, this guy, like maybe it doesn't always come out as, you know, you're talking all the time or whatever, but your mind can be more active. Like you can hold more conversations with people throughout the day, you know. And that just comes from just making fitness and working out a part of your life. It's like you have so much more time and energy for everything else. Sorry, you have so much more energy for everything else because you've just stayed fit your whole life. Whereas people that dabble in and out of fitness, they go through high and low energy periods. So I look at a guy like him, he works out, he's working out like every fucking, you know, every second scene in this show. He uses it as like stress relief. He uses it as ways to connect with his family. Like yeah. He uses it as part of his businesses and stuff. Like that makes him a high energy person. Same as The Rock, right? High energy person is constantly fit, always staying in a state of fitness. So critical. More people that can make that connection between like success in the business world and their fitness. It's like another thing. Actually, I'll add one more example into this is if you listen to Jordan Peterson talk at the moment on his podcast and stuff and interviews, because he's just, I don't know if people know, he's like just come out of like a 12-month coma. It's like,
oh my God.
Yeah, dude, he almost died. He got really sick. Coma. He was like really, really sick, right? Went in for some issue he was having with foods that weren't agreeing with him. He got prescribed some medication, and then when they got in, they scanned him. He was like, had pneumonia. He had like,
Jesus.
All these issues, right? And he got addicted to these pain medications or something. It's very, very complicated. Anyway, he was basically going to die. They're like, we can't keep you alive. There's like one therapy left. And it was an experimental therapy in Russia. And they put him in a coma and they let the drugs come out of his system and his body heal. And he's like, come out of it. And he's like, better, but he's still a bit fucked.
So he was like asleep, sort of unconscious for long periods.
An induced coma, yeah. I think maybe it wasn't 12 months, maybe it was like 3-6 months, but that everyone thought he was going to die. They were like, he was in the coma and they're like, this is experimental.
Comes out, he's like, never heard of COVID.
What is COVID? But he almost died. But anyway, so he's on podcast and I think he's been talking about the illness a little bit. And he said his one regret in life is that he didn't realize until now, until his health got taken away from him, his one regret is that he didn't work on strengthening his body earlier. Because he's like, the only thing... And really, this is the case for all people, but he's just obviously really good at articulating it. But the one thing that excites him and he enjoys most about his life is like hard challenges, right? Mm. Same as you and me. The things that we enjoy most in our life are like the really hard challenges set out for ourselves in business and in fitness, right? That's the most rewarding because it requires you to push yourself the most. And that is the most rewarding part of life. But his regret was that he didn't realize the harder he wanted to push himself, the more speaking gigs he wanted to do, the more planes he wanted to get on, the more tours, the more books he wanted to read, the more research, blah, blah, blah. It required such a strong physical body, more than what he expected. And he didn't realize until, he's like, yeah, I was like somewhat fit and I like kind of went to the gym and stuff and I looked after my health. But he's like, I really should have taken it. Like, you got to take your health to like the next level. You got to go like super hard and be strong and resilient because, especially if you want to take on hard challenges. And that's why he's like, I think I ended up getting pretty fucked up is because he was taking on challenges, but his body wasn't strong enough to like bounce back from it. And he didn't realize until he was basically in hospital all the time. He's like, I don't know if I would be in this position if my body was a lot stronger. And so it's just, I think, just a good reminder that it's not just for show, right? It's for everything. It's the vessel that carries you through to the end. And the stronger you can make it, the more resilient you can make your mind, the harder you can push yourself and keep progressing and everything, the better you're going to be in the long term.
Yeah, it's the resilience.
Yeah.
It's got to build it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so important. So glad we're fit. Okay. Should we get some listener questions?
Yes, we have pretty solid ones. I've never heard these people before either, which is fun. Zach Bestian, another question here from a new CrossFitter with competitive aspirations. How much time should I put into specific skill work each week? I find every time a CrossFit specific movement, like muscle-ups or handstand walks, for example, come up in a Metcon, I end up scaling them. So I feel like I never actually learn the real movements. Currently training 5 days a week on a good general CrossFit program. Should I take one of those rest days and dedicate it to skill work? Should I take 20 minutes every day to learning skills, or what do you recommend?
Why do I feel like we answered that question last week? We'll answer it again, but I think we answered it last week.
No, I don't think we did.
I remember that question.
Really?
Yeah. Anyway, let's answer it again. No, you're right. No, we didn't answer it. I was answering it somewhere else. But, okay, so he wants to know how to improve skills, right?
Mm.
This is interesting. So, with skill work...
goes across all skills.
Yeah. Yeah. So, skill work as a category is different to, like, energy system training. Mm. So, like, fitness, cardio. And then it's also different to, like, strength training, right? So, you can categorize it into different things. So, so in CrossFit, there's, like, a few skills. They're not super high-level skills. It's not, like, playing sport. That's obviously, like, tennis, right? Mm. Golf. Very high-level skills. Then you talk about CrossFit. The most high-level skill, would you say, is, like, probably double unders. Probably, like, requires the most time in coordination.
Yeah, from, like, a skill set point of view.
Yeah. I mean, muscle-ups, obviously, it's a skill as well, but there's, like, a huge strength component to it as well. And then, like, handstand walk, same thing. There's, like, a huge strength component to that skill.
The emphasis in CrossFit is on strength and fitness.
Yeah.
Much more than skill acquisition. It is skill acquisition, but it's not a skill heavy sport when you compare it to like a fucking skill heavy sport.
Yeah, which is why athletes that were never good skill heavy sport athletes end up in CrossFit. Because they're like, oh, my like timing coordination is like pretty fucking shit, but I'm like really strong and fit.
Mm.
You know, I was really good in the weight room, but I couldn't catch a ball. So I love CrossFit. Perfect. Right? Yeah. So that's how it always works. But then there's a problem when like the really coordinated, like really high skill people that are also strong and fit start CrossFit and then they win the games. Yeah. That's pretty much how it works. Like, oh, Rich Foney, what sports can you play? Everything.
Mm.
Yeah, watch me play flag football and like fucking step seven guys and twist and turn and jump and then catch the ball one-handed blind. He's like freak athlete, right?
I do think though that there is an emphasis. People that are often not as good at the skills in sports often do really like fitness.
Yeah.
Because that's the one thing they're really good at. Or they make up for it with fitness. Yeah. Often those people really move towards something like CrossFit.
Bro, the worst basketball player when I was growing up as a kid on the team was the best, like the fittest kid that there was, and he just played defense. He would just sprint back and just take the ball off people.
So if you're really good, you're like, oh, why do I need this gym thing?
Yeah. But like, he couldn't shoot.
Yeah.
So he's like, all right, I'll get you the ball and then you go score it for us. But I'll run back and I'll stop him getting it. So I just wait. I'm like, all right, cool. Like, just go get the ball.
The workhorse.
All right. Give it to me. Let me score. I think that, anyway, so to come to skill, developing skills is the most important thing when you're developing your skills, you don't do it under fatigue. And a lot of people, they try and practice double unders. They're getting some good progress, maybe first 2 or 3 minutes, and then they really start to fatigue. Their calves start to fatigue, they get frustrated, and they start trying harder and harder and getting more tense and getting really tired, and then they're basically no longer learning the skill correctly. So the best way to learn skills, and this is in the literature, is to do it under as little fatigue as possible with enough rest period so that you can just kind of like stop, reset, let the learning sink in a little bit into your brain and then try it again. I'll give you a perfect example, right? So there was like this cone drill that I was practicing for boxing. It's like this footwork drill. Mm. It's like, it's not that complicated, but you know, first time it's like, oh fuck, what the hell am I doing here? You have to think about it a bit. And I was like, okay, this is a skill. How am I going to learn this, right? So it's basically, there's like four patterns that you learn in this. I was like, all right, cool. I'm going to do pattern number one. So I do pattern number one. Then I'd rest. And I basically run pattern number one as slow as I can, try and speed it up. As skill starts to fall apart, stop, rest, cool. All right, do it again. So I did that 3 times until pattern number one, I could do it really fast, nonstop, way faster than I could the first time for about a minute straight. Done. Okay, then I let that sink in, gave myself rest, heart rate calmed down, carbs completely fresh. Okay, number two, three, and four. And I just repeated that. That whole process took probably like 15 minutes. Then I rested completely. And then you have to combine all the movement patterns together. So pattern one, two, three, and four, nonstop, as quick as possible. The first time I did it, I was like, oh my God, I must look so stupid doing this. I rested. By the time I got to the third time, I could do the whole thing. And I wasn't even thinking about it. My body was just doing it in the patterns because you had done so many reps correctly. Now, if I had done it really poorly and stuffed it up most of the time, and I hadn't done correct reps, my body's not going to know what to fall back on. Because it hasn't learned the proper skill. So really, you challenge the skill as you're practicing it, slow in the beginning so you get it perfect, right up until the point, because obviously as you add speed and power, that's when it breaks down, right up until the point it breaks, then you stop, then you rest, then you start again. That's how you need to learn a skill. Rest till you're back to being fresh. And what you know, you'll see every time, just depending on your nervous system and how quickly you learn skills and stuff, is like, you'll improve very quickly, or you'll improve just a little bit. You will improve. It just depends. For some people, it's faster. For some people, it's a little bit slower. Just depending on what type of athlete they are.
Yeah, I can't really add to it. I just think sometimes with CrossFit, you get confused whether it's like a skill thing you're trying to learn or a fitness issue you've got.
Mm.
And sometimes
or a strength issue.
Yeah, genuine. They're like, oh, I just can't get the skill down on this muscle up. nah, it's like really, really weak.
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, yeah, yeah, you can get it if the skill gets exceptional, but you know, just bring your strength up and then the skill can be average and you'll be 10 times better.
95% of times it's a strength issue.
Yeah.
Yeah. But eventually, you know, it's not a strength issue. Then it's like, okay, how can I make this skill more efficient? Mm. It's like Olympic weightlifting.
So you got to be, yeah, you got to be working on both always at the same time. But I just think it sounds like to me, this question, when you're in the early days, you like really think it's a skill thing. You're like, why can't my skill look like this CrossFitter? It's like, dude, that CrossFitter is way stronger, way more mobile, full beast compared to you. It's not going to look the same.
Yeah.
Okay, Brad Purden, best favorite exercise for shoulder mobility? Man, I think for me, it's just been working on my dowel pass-throughs and weighted dowel pass-throughs. Such an easy one to slowly progress over time. I think a few years ago, I learned how to do it weighted, and that progressed me much faster. And I went from like the very, very edge of the fucking dowel where you're like holding on the outsides of it to like, yeah, not hands together, but probably like 20 centimeters in on each side of the dowel.
Mm.
And that just has been the best thing for me.
That's what I was going to say. And I just think why I like it so much is because everyone can do it. Whereas if you could say like, oh, skin the cat or like, I don't know. Yeah, bridges or overhead squats and stuff, but they're just more advanced. I can get any client, no matter what level they're at. If they can't use a dowel, I just get them on a band. And I go, cool, we're going to do shoulder. I just call them dislocates.
Yeah.
Pass-throughs, whatever. And it's just, you don't actually dislocate shoulder, but...
Can do.
But. Yeah. But you look at them do it, and they're like, oh my God, like that's so hard or whatever. And it's like, yeah, but you did it. And now it's a really easy way to progress it as you go in.
Man, and it's hard to overdo them, where skin the cat's really easy to overdo them.
Or just like do them wrong.
Yeah, do them wrong. Yeah. End up with elbow pain. It's, yeah. You know, you can't do them every day if you've never done them before. This one you kind of can do every day.
Yeah.
You can progress. And then, you know, when I don't know if this is true or not, but I heard like the ultimate standard was like hands nearly together, like a thumbs distant apart with a 20 kilo barbell.
Jeez.
This could be like a fucking myth. That's what I heard. Crazy. Like in like crazy gymnasts, that's what they get up to. So basically my point is there is like there's no end to the progression. Yeah. I'm like, cool, this is like for a lifetime, I'll just keep doing this.
Yeah.
I don't need to get all the way there. But I'll keep trying to improve at it. And it can be done every day. Can be weighted. Can be light. Can be a band. Man.
Yeah, it's a great it's a great movement.
Okay, next question. Max Creevy, how to be and feel mentally switched on for training, especially in the afternoons? My two favorite ones, number one is music, for sure. I think music is so good because you start to build like a bit of a, it's like an anchor thing where you're like, oh, you like hear the song and you like start to get G'd up, right? And you can just like use the same song every day or like a certain type of artist. And it just like gets you into that zone the quickest. Man, it's like when you go to like a music concert, everyone gets like pre-G'd, right? No one's sitting there like, oh, man, it's like falling asleep.
Yeah.
It's like, no, like it's just music tends to have that power over you. And then really just training partners.
Mm.
Training partners can lift you up.
Accountability.
They can be inconsistent because they might be having a shit day. So you don't be too reliant on them. But if you think about, you know, when we were getting into it, it's usually one or both of those things at the same time.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, to give you something different, I wouldn't be drinking caffeine in the afternoon to stimulate yourself. But it's funny because we actually had this question the other day with one of our clients because he was like, oh, I can't do the 3 p.m. slot, even though I think it might be better for my schedule because I'm just so tired at 3 p.m. And I'm like, well, what's interesting is like the best thing for you when you're tired is movement to wake you up because at 3 p.m. you're not going to have a nap, right? Yeah. Especially if you're in the office. But it's almost the hardest time to motivate yourself because you also don't really want a nap. I mean, so you also don't want to come to the gym because you're tired. So I always say like the best part, the best place to start is like the lowest barrier to entry in terms of movement to get you going. So if you're like sitting, move to a standing position and walk around. If you're like standing and walking around, like drink a whole bunch of water. Like that'll do something that kind of moves you towards the path of working out. If you're a trainer and you're at the gym and you're tired, you know you have to work out. What's the easiest thing I can do? Cool, go sit on the bike and just start moving your legs, right? If you're able to do something, eventually you can build into something bigger. I think people think, oh man, I got to put like a heavy weight on the bar today and start squatting it. Don't start there. Start like, all right, cool. I just need to put 2 minutes into this bike. And like maybe the first 15 seconds, you're like, oh, I can't be bothered today. I'm so tired. But then you get to 2 minutes and your state's a little bit different, right? Tony Robbins always talks about change your state. Anytime you can like, if you're not feeling motivated, this is obviously more extreme, you won't be able to do this. But for example, yeah, if you can't wake up and I throw you into a cold shower, you're going to wake up, you know, because you changed your state. So anytime,
hard to sleep through that.
Yeah. So anytime you find yourself like, oh, I can't do this, I'm really tired, look for the easiest way to change your state. If you're sitting, standing, right? Like I said, if you're standing, walking. If you're like walking, standing, drink some water. Like change your state some way and that moves you. That small action is like the flow and effect into many other actions that will get you there.
Yeah, and if I guess think about those things, it's like, yeah, it's movement, temperature, music are like often the biggest state changes you can have.
Yeah. Yeah, music affects serotonin levels. Yeah, it boosts your mood. So hopefully that's helpful.
Next question. I think people often can misunderstand this one. Ryan Murray, 245. What's the benefit of doing 1.25 reps? We put 1.25 reps into a lot of our programs, MMP programs that we put out. It depends on the exercise, but usually the main reason we're doing this is to spend more time at the end range of motion of an exercise. So you're getting to that end range, whatever it is for the exercise, and then you're spending like double or triple the amount of time in there. I think it's really powerful as well because it builds more kind of strength and awareness in there, because rather than just like going down, kind of bouncing out of that position, coming out of it quickly, you're having to change direction again and go back down from a position you normally just blow past really quickly. Like, you know, a quarter of the way up, change direction, which you never normally do, and go back down. So the level of just like muscular control in the area needs to go up a lot, and like awareness of where your body is in space. So we use them a lot, and I think the best places to use them is, yeah, places where you may be weak. So maybe down the bottom of like a Bulgarian split squat.
Now, I think always, like, in terms of just a really good rule of thumb, is like I would always look to progress ways to make things harder without always having to add more weight. Especially if your clients or yourself, you know, you're a little bit older as well. Like, I think there becomes a limit to how much the weights can go up, but you want to still make things challenging. And it's kind of like a variation on tempo in some ways. So I always look to make changes like that before you necessarily add weight. Because, yeah, sometimes you can get way more benefit besides just adding more weight.
Last question. Hayley Stagus, what's the most memorable people episodes you've interviewed? Well, we can take this anywhere we want, but I'll tell you maybe one that stands out recently that if you've missed and you want to go back and listen to, or maybe one we haven't released. Man, I actually thought the episode we did with Hattie Boyle was really good. I think we've released it yet.
No, it's not out.
But it was good because OG listeners will know we had her on like years ago, maybe like 4 or 5 years ago, and it's cool to have her on 4 or 5 years again later. And just what I thought was interesting about it, and I'd recommend people go watch it when it comes, which is really the fact that how she's like kept competing and balanced that was interesting, because it'd be so easy to just stop doing that, right? Stop putting yourself out there, stop competing, just, you know, make money, do Instagram posts. But I really like people that have gone and been like, nah, like despite that, man, it's a hard sport.
Yeah.
You know, it would be very easy to not have to do that diet all year or large portions of the year. So, yeah, maybe there wasn't like tons of training information stuff in there, but there's a good life lesson you can like read through the lines there, which is a lot of these people, that reason they're out where they're at is because they haven't taken the easier path in that circumstance. Because there was definitely an easier path for her to just, oh, you know, like I've like won now. What's the point? She's been coming second.
Yeah.
She hasn't even been winning.
Yeah.
So there would be an easy thing, but like, oh, I just like won't tarnish my record. I'll just, you know, sit on my victory and leave it. But like, no, she's like, she's on the grind competing.
She's a real competitor, Hattie.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a real.
Nothing to prove. Pure competitor. You know, I'm sure she makes fine money without competing.
Yeah.
But she's still out there.
Yeah. I was actually going to say Liz King, who is like, we release it. She's the expert on like women's eating disorders. And yeah, I just think it's always a great conversation to areas that we are not as familiar with girls around eating disorders and, man, I can't remember the condition it's called, but like extreme exercise.
But you had lean. It down.
I know. Yeah, I know. I've now forgot it. Hypothalamic amenorrhea?
Yeah, I think that's
HPA or HTA or something. And it's like basically you lose your period, right, from too much exercise, which is like a huge issue in our industry. And, you know, it gets idolized, girls that like are super lean and stuff, where, you know, I'd probably throw someone like Hattie in that bucket, you know? She's like, obviously got an amazing physique. I can't speak for what it's like with her. I don't actually know. But when you get to those levels of competing and lean, like, yeah, it's like not perfect for your reproductive system, right? And that's kind of what we went over. But, you know, Hattie is who she is and she has no issues with that and no apologies for that. But it's, you know, it's also important to understand as the everyday person that's trying to be healthy, obviously that's a sport. That's completely different. We've always said that sport is not the healthiest thing, you know, at the highest level. These are some of the sacrifices she's probably willing to make, but as I think it was as kind of a contrast to what we're always talking about, man, it was a really good, interesting conversation, and I think it's very valuable for a lot of women, and the feedback was really good as well. So I think that was a great podcast. Cool. All right, we'll bring this one into the end zone and just wrap it up.
You know, I was going to add, just looking at the list on the Peloton, the store's opening like right below the studio. We should just go down and do a ride.
Yeah, I'll do it.
In a week. Because I think you can like do a fucking class or some shit in there.
Yeah.
And then we'll give you guys a proper review on what it's like on the bike.
Yeah, I'll fucking do it. All right, guys. So make sure if you haven't already to check out Black Roll. Black Roll make the most premium rollout gear, bands. So like we use like a lot of their booty bands and stuff now. They like make really good cotton ones that don't tear and like the rubber doesn't tear. So you get them and just like their foam rollers and their mobility kits, they're not going to wear out. So make sure you check them out. MyMuscleProject.com/BlackRoll. And then, of course, guys, we use Whoop every single day. All our clients use Whoop. It's just the best tool. And I feel like at this point, if you're not tracking biofeedback, especially if you have clients, if you're a coach, you're missing out on a great retention tool. 100%. You're missing out on a great point of difference to grow your business. So check out our Whoop discount code, themymuscleproject.com/Whoop, where it's there. This week, no book, no movie for you guys. If you haven't, go check out Wall Street, the Mark Wahlberg one that we mentioned last week. It's I'm moving it up to a 4.5 out of 5. I haven't finished it yet, but I'm
by next week we'll be at a 5.
It's getting better. So definitely check that out. Guys, as always, thank you so much for tuning in. We love your support. We'll keep doing this. Oh, and before I forget, the event. If you haven't, we're releasing more information about the event this Friday on the show. So make sure if you don't normally listen to In the Black on Friday, you listen this week. We're announcing something special about the gym owners event. So if you're a gym owner, please tune in to In the Black this Friday. There is more information on the gym owners event. You will not want to miss that. All right. Thanks so much, guys. And we'll speak to you all next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themymuscleproject.com/The After Show. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.